Good evening, and welcome back to our New World Witchery Happy Hallows October Storytelling Extravaganza. This is week 3. I hope you've been enjoying our episodes so far this month. We should have at least one more following up on this episode. Hope that you've been getting into the Halloween spirit, thinking up your own ghost stories, reading a few spooky tales, perhaps a gothic novel or two. But whatever you're doing to prepare for the Samhain, Hallows, Halloween season, I hope it's spooky and spectacular for you. Tonight's tales, and I do mean tales as in plural, are two gripping accounts of the supernatural, with a little poem in between. We'll be hearing from old masters and new of the horror genre. We'll begin with a chilling account of witchcraft in colonial New England by New World Witchery favorite Nathaniel Hawthorne. Then we'll have a short, terrifying poem by Stephen Crane. And we'll finish out with, well, perhaps not exactly modern, but relatively recent horror master H.P. Lovecraft. I hope you enjoy these stories. They're some of my favorites, and they're short, sweet, and to the terrifying, utterly ghastly point. But enough build-up. Now let's get to the stories themselves. Enjoy.
The Hollow of the Three Hills by Nathaniel Hawthorne. In those strange old times when fantastic dreams and madman's reveries were realized among the actual circumstances of life, two persons met together at an appointed hour and place. One was a lady graceful in form and fair of feature, though pale and troubled and smitten with an untimely blight in what should have been the fullest bloom of her years. The other was an ancient and meanly dressed woman of ill-favored aspect, and so withered, shrunken, and decrepit that even the space since she began to decay must have exceeded the ordinary term of human existence. In the spot where they encountered, no mortal could observe them. Three little hills stood near each other, and down in the midst of them sunk a hollow basin, almost mathematically circular, 200 or 300 feet in breadth, and of such depth that a stately cedar might be but just visible above the sides. Dwarf pines were numerous upon the hills, and partly fringed the outer verge of the intermediate hollow, within which there was nothing but the brown grass of October, and here and there a tree trunk that had fallen long ago and lay mouldering, with no green successor from its roots. One of these masses of decaying wood, formerly a majestic oak, rested close beside a pool of green and sluggish water at the bottom of the basin. Such scenes as this, so gray tradition tells, were once the resort of a power of evil and his plighted subjects, and here at midnight or on the dim verge of evening they were said to stand round the mantling pool, disturbing its putrid waters in the performance of an impious baptismal rite. The chill beauty of an autumnal sunset was now gilding the three hilltops, whence a paler tint stole down their sides into the hollow. "Here is our pleasant meeting come to pass," said the aged crone, "according as thou hast desired. Say quickly what thou wouldst have of me, for there is but a short hour that we may tarry here." As the old withered woman spoke, a smile glimmered on her countenance like lamplight on the wall of a sepulchre. The lady trembled and cast her eyes upward to the verge of the basin, as if meditating to return with her purpose unaccomplished, but it was not so ordained. "I am a stranger in this land, you know," she said at length. "Whence I come it matters not, but I have left those behind me with whom my fate was intimately bound. and from whom I am cut off forever. There's a weight in my bosom that I cannot away with, and I have come hither to inquire of their welfare.
And who is there by this green pool that can bring thee news from the ends of the earth? Cried the old woman, peering into the lady's face. Not from my lips mayst thou hear these tidings. Yet be thou bold, and the daylight shall not pass away from yonder hilltop before thy wish be granted.
I will do your bidding though I die, replied the lady desperately.
The old woman seated herself on the trunk of the fallen tree, threw aside the hood that shrouded her gray locks, and beckoned her companion to draw near.
Kneel down, she said, and lay your forehead on my knees.
She hesitated a moment, but the anxiety that had long been kindling burned up fiercely within her. As she knelt down, the border of her garment was dipped into the pool. She laid her forehead on the old woman's knees, and the latter drew a cloak about the lady's face so that she was in darkness. Then she heard the muttered words of prayer, in the midst of which she started, and would have risen.
Let me flee! Let me flee and hide myself, that they may not look upon me! She cried.
But, with returning recollection, she hushed herself, and was still as death. For it seemed as if other voices, familiar in infancy, and unforgotten through many wanderings and in all the vicissitudes of her heart and fortune, were mingling with the accents of the prayer. At first the words were faint and indistinct, not rendered so by distance, but rather resembling the dim pages of a book which we strive to read by an imperfect and gradually brightening light. In such a manner as the prayer proceeded did these voices strengthen upon the ear, till at length the petition ended, and the conversation of an aged man and a woman, broken and decayed like himself, became distinctly audible to the lady as she knelt. But those strangers appeared not to stand in the hollow depth between the three hills. Their voices were encompassed and re-echoed by the walls of a chamber, the windows of which were rattling in the breeze. The regular vibration of a clock, the crackling of fire, and the tinkling of the embers as they fell among those ashes rendered the scene almost as vivid as if painted to the eye. By a melancholy hearth sat these two old people, the man calmly despondent, the woman querulous and tearful. And the words were all of sorrow. They spoke of a daughter, a wanderer they knew not where, bearing dishonor along with her, and leaving shame and affliction to bring their gray heads to the grave. They alluded also to other and more recent woe, but in the midst of their talk their voices seemed to melt into the sound of the wind sweeping mournfully among the autumn leaves. And when the lady lifted her eyes, there she was, kneeling in the hollow between three hills.
A weary and lonesome time yonder old couple have of it, remarked the old woman, smiling in the lady's face.
And did you also hear them?
Exclaimed she, a sense of intolerable humiliation triumphing over her agony and fear.
Yea, and we have yet more to hear, replied the old woman. Wherefore, cover thy face quickly.
Again the withered hag poured forth the monotonous words of a prayer that was not meant to be acceptable in heaven, and soon in the pauses of her breath strange murmurings began to thicken, gradually increasing, so as to drown and overpower the charm by which they grew. Shrieks pierced through the obscurity of sound, and were succeeded by the singing of sweet female voices, which in their turn gave way to a wild roar of laughter broken suddenly by groanings and sobs, forming altogether a ghastly confusion of terror and mourning and mirth. Chains were rattling, fierce and stern voices uttered threats, and the scourge resounded at their command. All these noises deepened and became substantial to the listener's ear, till she could distinguish every soft and dreamy accent of the love songs that died causelessly into funeral hymns. She shuddered at the unprovoked wrath which blazed up like the spontaneous kindling of flume, and she grew faint at the fearful merriment raging miserably around her. In the midst of this wild scene, where unbound passions jostled each other in a drunken career, there was one solemn voice of a man, and a manly and melodious voice it might once have been. He went to and fro continually, and his feet sounded upon the floor. In each member of that frenzied company, whose own burning thoughts had become their exclusive world, he sought an auditor for the story of his individual wrong, and interpreted their laughter and tears as his reward of scorn or pity. He spoke of woman's perfidy, of a wife who had broken her holiest vows, of a home and heart made desolate. Even as he went on, the shout, the laugh, the shriek, the sob rose up in unison, till they changed into the hollow, fitful, and uneven sound of the wind as it fought among the pine trees on those three lonely hills. The lady looked up, and there was the withered woman smiling in her face.
"Couldst thou have thought there were such merry times in a madhouse?" inquired the latter.
"True, true," said the lady to herself. "There is mirth within its walls, but misery, misery without."
"Wouldst thou hear more?" demanded the old woman.
"There is one other voice I would fain listen to again," replied the lady faintly.
"Then lay down thy head speedily upon my knees, that thou mayest get thee hence before the hour be past."
The golden skirts of day were yet lingering upon the hills, but deep shades obscured the hollow and the pool, as if somber night were rising thence to overspread the world. Again that evil woman began to weave her spell. Long did it proceed unanswered, till the knolling of a bell stole in among the intervals of her words, like a clang that had travelled far over valley and rising round, and was just ready to die in the air. The lady shook upon her companion's knees as she heard that boding sound. Stronger it grew, and sadder, and deepened into the tone of a death bell, knolling dolefully from some ivy-mantled tower, and bearing tidings of mortality and woe to the cottage, to the hall, and to the solitary wayfarer, that all might weep for the doom appointed in turn to them. Then came a measured tread, passing slowly, slowly on, as of mourners with the coffin, their garments trailing on the ground, so that the ear could measure the length of their melancholy array. Before them went the priest, reading the burial service, while the leaves of his book were rustling in the breeze. And though no voice but his was heard to speak aloud, still there were revilings and anathemas, whispered but distinct, from women and from men, breathed against the daughter who had wrung the aged hearts of her parents, the wife who had betrayed the trusting fondness of her husband, the mother who had sinned against natural affection and left her child to die. The sweeping sound of the funeral train faded away like a thin vapor, and the wind, that just before had seemed to shake the coffin pall, moaned sadly round the verge of the hollow between three hills. But when the old woman stirred the kneeling lady, she lifted not her head.
"Here has been a sweet hour's sport," said the withered crone, chuckling to herself. The end.
There is a Grey Thing by Stephen Crane. There is a grey thing that lives in the treetops. None know the horror of its sight save those who meet death in the wilderness. But one is enabled to see branches move at its passing, to hear at times the wail of black laughter, and to come often upon mystic places. Places where the thing has just been. The Terrible Old Man by H.P. Lovecraft. It was the design of Angelo Ricci and Joe Chanek and Manuel Silva to call on the terrible old man. This old man dwells all alone in a very ancient house on Water Street near the sea, and is reputed to be both exceedingly rich and exceedingly feeble, which forms a situation very attractive to men of the profession of Messrs. Ricci, Chanek, and Silva, for that profession was nothing less dignified than robbery. The inhabitants of Kingsport say and think many things about the terrible old man, which generally keep him safe from the attention of gentlemen like Mr. Ricci and his colleagues, despite the almost certain fact that he hides a fortune of indefinite magnitude somewhere about his musty and venerable abode. He is, in truth, a very strange person, believed to have been a captain of East India clipper ships in his day, so old that no one can remember when he was young, and so taciturn that few know his real name. Among the gnarled trees in the front yard of his aged and neglected place, he maintains a strange collection of large stones, oddly grouped and painted so that they resemble the idols in some obscure Eastern temple. This collection frightens away most of the small boys who love to taunt the terrible old man about his long white hair and beard, or to break the small paned windows of his dwelling with wicked missiles. But there are other things which frighten the older and more curious folk who sometimes steal up to the house to peer in through the dusty panes. These folks say that on a table in a bare room, on the ground floor, are many peculiar bottles, in each a small piece of lead suspended pendulum-wise from a string. And they say that the terrible old man talks to these bottles, addressing them by names such as Jack, Scarface, Long Tom, Spanish Joe, Peters, and Mate Ellis. That whenever he speaks to a bottle, the little lead pendulum within makes certain definite vibrations, as if in answer. Those who have watched the tall, lean, terrible old man in these peculiar conversations do not watch him again. But Angelo Ricci and Joe Chanek and Manuel Silva were not of Kingsport blood. They were of that new and heterogeneous alien stock which lies outside the charmed circle of New England life and traditions, and they saw in the terrible old man merely a tottering, almost hopeless graybeard, who could not walk without the aid of his knotted cane, and whose thin, weak hands shook pitifully. They were really quite sorry in their way for the lonely, unpopular old fellow, whom everybody shunned, and at whom all the dogs barked singularly. But business is business, and to a robber whose soul is in his profession, there is a lure and a challenge about a very old and feeble man who has no account at the bank, and who pays for his few necessities at the village store with Spanish gold and silver minted 2 centuries ago. Messrs. Ricci, Chanek, and Silva selected the night of April 11th for their call. Mr. Ricci and Mr. Silva were to interview the poor old gentleman, while Mr. Chanek waited for them and their presumable metallic burden with a covered motor car in Ship Street by the gate in the tall rear wall of their host's grounds. Desire to avoid needless explanations in case of unexpected police intrusions prompted these plans for a quiet and unostentatious departure. As prearranged, the three adventurers started out separately in order to prevent any evil-minded suspicions afterwards. Messrs. Ricci and Silva met in Water Street by the old man's front gate, and although they did not like the way the moon shone down upon the painted stones through the budding branches of the gnarled trees, they had more important things to think about than mere idle superstition. They feared it might be unpleasant work making the terrible old man loquacious concerning his hoarded silver and gold, for aged sea captains are notably stubborn and perverse. Still, he was very old and very feeble, and there were 2 visitors. Messrs. Ricci and Silva were experienced in the art of making unwilling persons voluble, and the screams of a weak and exceptionally venerable man can be easily muffled. So they moved up to the one lighted window, and heard the terrible old man talking childishly to his bottles with pendulums. Then they donned masks and knocked politely at the weather-stained oaken door. Waiting seemed very long to Mr. Chanak as he fidgeted restlessly in the covered motor car by the terrible old man's back gate in Ship Street. He was more than ordinarily tender-hearted, and he did not like the hideous screams he had heard in the ancient house just after the hour appointed for the deed. Had he not told his colleagues to be as gentle as possible with the pathetic old sea captain? Very nervously, he watched that narrow oaken gate in the high and ivy-clad stone wall. Frequently, he consulted his watch and wondered at the delay. Had the old man died before revealing where his treasure was hidden, and had a thorough search become necessary? Mr. Chanak did not like to wait so long in the dark in such a place. Then he sensed a soft tread or tapping on the walk inside the gate, heard a gentle fumbling at the rusty latch, and saw the narrow, heavy door swing inward. And in the pallid glow of the single dim street lamp, he strained his eyes to see what his colleagues had brought out of that sinister house which loomed so close behind. But when he looked, he did not see what he had expected, for his colleagues were not there at all, but only the terrible old man, leaning quietly on his knotted cane and smiling hideously. Mr. Chanak had never before noticed the color of that man's eyes, and now he saw that they were yellow. Little things make considerable excitement in little towns, which is the reason that Kingsport people talked all that spring and summer about three unidentifiable bodies, horribly slashed as with many cutlasses, and horribly mangled as by the tread of many cruel boot heels, which the tide washed in. And some people even spoke of things as trivial as the deserted motor car found in Ship Street, or certain especially inhuman cries, probably of a stray animal or migratory bird heard in the night by wakeful citizens. But in this idle village gossip, the terrible old man took no interest at all. He was by nature reserved, and when one is aged and feeble, one's reserve is doubly strong. Besides, so ancient a sea captain must have witnessed scores of things much more stirring in the far-off days of his unremembered youth. The End.
Well, there you have it. That was The Terrible Old Man by H.P. Lovecraft, There Is a Grey Thing by Stephen Crane, and The Hollow of the Three Hills by Nathaniel Hawthorne. I hope you enjoyed our little spooky story fest there. We'll be back in about a week with another set of spooky tales for you. Until next time then, thank you for listening to New World Witchery, and happy Hallows to you. Good night. New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Grifos Muertos by Jeffrey Luck Lucas and can be found on magnatune.com.